Thank you. Listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
Check 1-2-1-2. Check. Check 1-2.
With America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Yeah, you know that line about come out screaming? That's me. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. We are 45 minutes late getting started. It's not my fault, but it kind of is. Certainly not yours. No, I walked back in here to the studio to get started, to get Dr. Bill started. And obviously there was no virtual sitter for the study of the Constitution today. And that is because, well, The computer that has streamed the stream up to the White Rose Society servers for lo, yea, verily, these last 5 years or so, and has been almost constantly on all during that time, decided to head for its long home and its just reward. It died. Now, long ago, with the aid of the irrepressible and inimitable Peter Godbold, long ago, we built a backup computer. And so I have just spent the last, 3 hours and 45 minutes getting that sucker online. And it's still not entirely okay. Because you'll notice if it's just the stream and nothing playing, as Tim from L.A. noted in the chat room a few minutes ago, headonradionetwork.com/chatroom, and it sounds like somebody's flying in an airplane, so, God, it never stops. And on top of that, the fact that, I did the basic math for where we stand on fundraising, because we were getting some collection calls. And I talked to Boss Man Wayne a little bit ago, and he confirmed for me that yes, there has been rather of an echo in the very empty horn mailbox of late. So, here we are again, coming up on the Ides of March, no less. How apropos.
But we are, oh, gosh, we're about $500 away from being where we ought to be at the middle of the month. So I'm very grateful to our dear friend, Dr. John, who dropped a note to me earlier today in his effort to help us keep all of this going. Dr. John said, and I'll have it here in just a second. Dr. John said, I'd like to put a $50 challenge on the table tonight. I'll match the first $50 to come in, any combination thereof, and that would be great because, let's see, we were at 270 in the hole beginning with the last night. Last night we ended 170 in the hole. So tonight we start, let's see, $320 in the hole, which, yeah, basically puts us right where we would be needing to be at the middle of the month. So that's where that is. PayPal button, you know where it is. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. So, and the snail mail address is under the tab contribute. I just wanted to let you know where we stand because, oh, look, get to rebuild another computer. And that's what it takes to stay on the air. But enough of all of that. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Habemus. Wait, my Latin. Habemus homophobiam. Habemus fascisto. Habemus papa. Papem. Yeah, Frank. Frank. And along those lines, a couple of notes. One coming from Ron and Raleigh. Since it's prayer meeting Wednesday, and it is, I thought I'd express my feelings concerning the new pope. The first words out of Tom Hartman's mouth today were, "We have a new pope." Referring back to the old Lone Ranger Tonto joke you told yesterday, my reply to Mr. Hartman was, "What do you mean we, you pompous, self-aggrandizing, name-dropping ass? As far as I'm concerned, I don't give a rat's ass who the pope is." The only thing I have to say about the Pope and the Catholic Church is that they need to keep their noses out of secular politics and clean up their own house. I think that whenever a bishop, Monsignor, or the Pope himself opens their mouths about a political situation, they should give up their tax-exempt status. No other church gets this kind of publicity. Why should the Catholics? Do we know or care who the Coptic Pope is? Do we know who heads the Russian Orthodox Church, the Lutheran Church, or any of the denominations? I suggest that we ignore these dress-wearing old men and relegate them to the dustbin of history. Ron in Raleigh. Well said. Although, the head of the Russian Orthodox Church, isn't he called the Metropolitan? And doesn't that have a hip and swinging kind of groove to it? The Metropolitan? The Met? And then This from Philip, who is in rare form this evening, in a note titled, "Frankly Speaking, Har Har." I am shocked, I tell you, that the Catholic Cardinals, not to be confused with the more winsome St. Louis baseball team or the lowly Arizona football team that Mark Sanchez would be wise not to play for even if he were traded, lest he be erroneously detained as an illegal, have chosen an elderly male of Italian ancestry as a pope. Given that they have had a German and many, many Italian popes already, I thought they might select a Japanese pope to complete a new axis of authoritarian male hegemony. Instead, they've selected an Italian export and proclaimed it a new day, and he's relatively young at 76, while referring to him, the son of Italian immigrants, as the first non-European pope. Yeah, that's a real knee slapper. A Quechua or Mapuche cardinal as pope would be a non-European. But the son of Italian immigrants with an Italian surname who speaks fluent Italian from a South American country in which 86.4% of the population self-identify as being European is hardly non-European. Meet the new church, same as the old church. According to the press, Pope Frank, an oxymoron if ever I read one, inherits a church wrestling with an array of challenges which, in my humble secular opinion, has to be a step up from a church wrestling with young boys. Which they're still doing, too, by the way, also. At any rate, between yawns, I must say, frankly, Cardinal Scarlet, I don't give a damn. Pax Wobiscum, Philip. That's just beautiful.
Yeah.
So, okay, yeah, there's a couple of initial observations. It strikes me that, yeah, this is no game changer. And frankly, I feel a little, it is prayer meeting Wednesday, so it's okay to talk about this, but if you want to. But I have about as much intellectual or emotional investment in who the Bishop of Rome is. Well, let's put it this way. I'm much more concerned with who the greenskeeper is at Augusta or who the guy is who takes care of the grass at Wrigley Field. And both of them have roughly the same spiritual authority as Pope Frank. Quite possibly more spiritual authority. The church in the 20th and 21st century has a real problem. First, you've got Pius, back during the Second World War, doing everything in his power to protect his white ass at the expense of no small number of Jews who were initiated into the Holocaust because of Pius's less than pious commitment to self-preservation. Yeah, that whole martyr thing just lost it. That's not the coin of the realm anymore. And then a few years ago, we get Benedict, a man who had been a member of the Hitler Youth. And now we get Frank. Who chooses the name Francis, I suspect, as a bit of cover for what his past is. And his past is seriously weird. And you might even say, oh, I don't know, evil. If we're going to throw that word around. Let's see here. You'll notice I started with Habemus Homophobiam. That's because of words like this. Now, granted, it's been translated, but it's probably a pretty close translation in English. Let's not be naive. We're not talking about a simple political battle. It is a destructive pretension, it's pretty pretentious in its own right, it is a destructive pretension against the plan of God. We are not talking about a mere bill, but rather a machination of the father of lies. That'd be the devil, you know, Satan, that seeks to confuse and deceive the children of God. That's Frank back when he was just an archbishop or whatever. That's Frank talking about same-sex marriage, or what we recognize as marriage equality. A machination. Two guys picking out a China pattern is a machination of the father of lies that seeks to confuse and deceive the children of God. Really? I never understood love to... love can be, well, confusing, deceptive, really? That? Let me be damned. So, yeah, he's got a little homophobia problem. Who are we kidding? He's got a great big homophobia problem. But that's not the biggest of his problems. I'd say the biggest of his problems has something to do with a period of time that in Argentina was referred to as the Guerra Sucia. In English, we call it the Dirty War. Right-wing authoritarian fascist government of Argentina. From the 1970s into the early 1980s. And with a little bit of the connivance of old Ronnie Reagan and, you know, some of those God-fearing Republicans. It killed, and the term is disappeared, thousands of people for not thinking the right way. Now, this, and Pope Frank's involvement with that, well, he did it his way. And his way was not just like Pope Pius to sort of turn his back on the horror and cower in fear. No. Pope Frank, being a Jesuit, is a take-charge kind of guy. So Pope Frank, well, let's go to a description as rendered by Hugh O'Shaughnessy at The Guardian back in January 2011. In January 2011, Hugh O'Shaughnessy wrote the following. Benedict XVI gave us words of great comfort and encouragement in the message he delivered on Christmas Eve. God anticipates us again and again in unexpected ways, the Pope said. He does not cease to search for us, to raise us up as often. We might need. He does not abandon the lost sheep in the wilderness into which it had strayed. God does not allow himself to be confounded by our sin. Again and again, he begins afresh with us. Shaughnessy writes, if these words comforted and encouraged me, they will surely have done the same for leaders of the church in Argentina, among many others. To the judicious and fair-minded outsider, it has been clear for years that the upper reaches of the Argentine church contained many lost sheep in the wilderness, men who had communed and supported the unspeakably brutal Western-supported military dictatorship which seized power in that country in 1976 and battened on it for years. Not only did the generals slaughter thousands unjustly, often dropping them out of airplanes over the River Plate and selling off their orphan children to the highest bidder. Really. They also murdered at least two bishops and many priests. Yet even the execution of other men of the cloth did nothing to shake the support of senior clerics, including representatives of the Holy See, for the criminality of their leader, General Jorge Rafael Videla, and his minions. Here's where it starts getting interesting. As it happens, in the week before Christmas, in the city of Cordoba, Videla and some of his military police cohorts were convicted by their country's courts of the murder of 31 people between April and October 1976, a small fraction of the killings they were responsible for. The convictions brought life sentences for some of the military. These were not to be served, as has often been the case in Argentina and neighboring Chile, in comfy armed forces retirement homes, but in common prisons. Unsurprisingly, there was dancing in the city streets when the judge announced the sentences. What one did not hear from any senior member of the Argentine hierarchy was any expression of regret for the church's collaboration in these crimes. The extent of the church's complicity in the dark deeds was excellently set out by Horacio Virbitsky, one of Argentina's most notable journalists, in his book El Silencio. He recounts how the Argentine Navy, pay attention, this is the good part, we've got, this is the meat. He recounts how the Argentine Navy, with the connivance of Cardinal Jorge Bergoglio, now the Jesuit Archbishop of Buenos Aires, hid from a visiting delegation of the Inter-American Human Rights Commission, the dictatorship's political prisoners. Bergoglio was hiding them in nothing less than his holiday home on an island called El Silencio, the silence, in the River Plate. The most shaming thing for the church is that in such circumstances, Bergoglio's name was allowed to go forward in the ballot to choose the successor of John Paul II. What scandal would not have ensued if the first pope ever to be elected from the continent of America had been revealed as an accessory to murder and false imprisonment? See, this is an article from 2011. Now it has gone forward. Now, in fact, the first pope ever to be elected from the continent of America has been revealed as an accessory to murder and false imprisonment. Kidnapping. False imprisonment sounds so technical. It's kidnapping. The new pope is a kidnapper. Really? Meanwhile, and this is all just context. Meanwhile, out there today on the tweets, Agnes saw this and sent it along. At Speaker Boner. Thanks. Thanks be to God for our new Pope Francis I. U.S. Catholics offer prayers and blessings to His Holiness. Really? Praying to His Holiness? You're doing that, John? Absolutely. Well, we know one of two things about John Boner. Either he's not much bothered by accessory to murder and kidnapping, or maybe he just hasn't heard yet. Me, I'm guessing it's the former and not the latter. One would have thought, writes Shaughnessy, that the Argentine bishops would have seized the opportunity to call for pardon for themselves and put on sackcloth and ashes as the sentences were announced in Cordoba, but that has so far not happened. But happily, their eminences have just been given another chance to express contrition. Next month, and that would have been February 2011, the convicted murderer of Videla will be arraigned for his part in the killing of Enrique Angelelli, Bishop of the Andean Diocese of La Rioja, and a supporter of the cause of poorer Argentines. He was run off the highway by a hit squad of the Videla regime and killed on 4th August 1976, shortly after Videla's putsch. Cardinal, now Pope, Bergoglio has plenty of time to be measured for a suit of sackcloth, perhaps tailored in a suitable clerical gray, to be worn when the church authorities are called into the witness box by the investigating judge in the Angelelli case. Ashes will be readily available if the records of the Argentine bishop's many disingenuous and outright mendacious statements about Videla and Angelelli are burned. Hot diggity. Philip writes in, I say let's not discuss the Church of Rome tonight. Sorry. However, I have heard rumors that the new Pope's first encyclical on human life and curtailment of the rights of women and their reproductive choices will be entitled Frankenbeans, Back to the Future, or My View of Women's Rights in Modern Time. None. Frankenbeans, B-E-I-N, apostrophe S, Beans, Frankenbeans. Back to the Future, or My View of Women's Rights in Modern Time. None. That's all I can muster in my ecclesiastical anemia, but any idea, Phillips says, what the new guy was doing during the time of the generals in the Dirty War? Pax Vobiscum, some more. Philip. Yeah, that's what he was doing. He was participating. Now, I'm sure that once he kidnapped them, he must certainly, I mean, being a good Jesuit and everything, he must have prayed for them, prayed over them. But no clerical gray. He wandered out onto that balcony and in a shiny white wedding dress. The church has a fascism problem, doesn't it? Well, yeah, it kind of does. So, you know, there's your popery. He is a Jesuit, however, so I suggest they double security for Queen Elizabeth II. The Jesuits, you might recall, tried to murder the first Queen Elizabeth because the Pope put a price on her head. He put a contract out on her. Really? Darn that history. Yeah. So, there's that. Now, there is other stuff to deal with on this prayer meeting Wednesday. You thought with the end of the Republican presidential pageant, we had heard the last of Bro Fro Mix, Rick Frothy Mixture Santorum. Well, wait, let's not do that yet. Let's go to the phones instead. Hey, welcome to the program. Sorry, I'm a little addled right now.
Yeah, me too, man.
What's up, Jeremy?
Too much. I just want to, I'm going to piss off Philip here right now. Has it missed anybody that the Catholic Church, after World War II, took great participation in hiding Nazis?
Well, there is that as well.
We just had the ex-Nazi Pope. Now they elect one from a country where they actively sent Nazis to hide from prosecution.
Mm-hmm.
I'm almost irate over the whole part of it.
You know, if it was anything but the Catholic Church, you might be. But to expect ethics or morality from the hierarchy of the Catholic Church, given what we know them to be, you know, serial rapists, kiddie diddlers. You know, anybody who thinks that outfit's going to change, well, they're not paying attention.
I wasn't expecting change. I'm just kind of, especially since this guy's a 76-year-old guy, he's suddenly going to change the role and the direction the church wants to flow and their views on everything and his clear homophobia and just stuff like that. I didn't expect change, but...
Well, even the black guy, the African cardinal that everybody was saying, ooh, wouldn't that be neat? He says that the church doesn't, pedophilia is a white folks' problem. That the church in Africa doesn't have any of those issues. So, you know, where's this great reformer? The Pope Frank ran away from liberation theology as quickly as he could get away from it because he's a climber. You know, he wanted to be in, you know, all good and snuggly with John Paul II, who hated him some liberation theology. Yeah, that whole thing about getting down and wallering around with the poor. Now, the for-profit media, Jeremy, didn't waste any time. Did you know? I mean, I thought Chris Jansing was gonna faint. Somebody get her the smelling salts. Did you know he washed the feet of some AIDS victims? That's how pious this man is. I wonder if he washed the feet of the dead from the Dirty War, don't you, Jeremy?
I'd like to know that. That reminds me of back when, I want to say it was either Haiti or Cuba had that bad earthquake. And, yeah, I think it was Haiti had that earthquake, and it pretty much leveled all of the houses in Haiti because they're all third world
built. Yeah.
And Junior and Clinton went down there, and I remember this from 60 Minutes. They never cut it out. They didn't make mention of it, but it was slowed down, and people saw it after the fact, that they were both shaking hands, reaching into medical tents and shaking people's hands. And as Bush backed out of the tent from shaking someone's hand, he wiped his fucking hands on Clinton's shirt because that was a dirty, little dirty black kid.
Oh, my God.
That sickened me from the day I saw it. I already didn't like the man, but that just deepened my dislike for him. The fact that he did it, and he even got, like, this disgusted look on his face, and he turned away, like, he, like, rolled his eyes and rubbed his hand on the back of his shirt, just kind of, like, to wipe the germs off and walked away.
Oh. Why am I not surprised?
I know, no one would be surprised. But, that's basically what I wanted to bring up, was the fact that they hid Nazis, and now he's coming from a country where they hid Nazis.
Yeah, where the hidden Nazis hid.
Where the hidden Nazis hid, and a lot of them were found by the Israelis searching for them. They had a pretty much their version of the SEALs, that were Nazi hunters after World War II, and they did a damn good job of finding them. And more than often, they didn't come to justice. They were dealt justice on the spot, which... who's to say how that should be, but I can understand why in some cases. In fact, I'm pretty sure that they, there's one famous, I can't think of his name right now, it might have been Mengele, I actually think it was Joseph Mengele. There's pictures of who they believe he became, and I want to say he was part of a church, the Catholic Church in the end. He was like a preacher.
Don't say Catholic Church. Don't say Catholic Church and in the end in the same sentence, please, Jeremy.
I'm sorry, I know. But he was part of the Catholic Church as a bishop or something towards the end of his life, which was, I think, in the, I want to say, the 70s. Never quite proved it, but they're pretty sure it was him based on just things of today, computers, computer software and stuff.
Right. What can you say? This is... this is what they are. I mean, it's like being shocked that a skunk puts out a bad smell.
Right, and then I got into it with someone a little while before we went on the air, and basically they posted something about the Pope, and I just said something to the effect of what I just said, and she's like, the person I got into it was like, let's not bash our Pope right off the bat. He's not Jerry Sandusky, for God's sake. He's worse.
Yeah.
As a whole, the Catholic religion is worse than Jerry Sandusky ever dreamed.
Well, I mean, can anybody pretty please explain to me why it is that the for-profit media have to fall all over themselves over this? I mean, honest to goodness. Well, I've got a piece here from Eugene Finnerman over at Your RDA of Irony that is just spot on. And I'll share it in a minute after we're done with our conversation. The media, the media falderal has been nothing short of disgusting. But again, that's like expecting a skunk not to stink. So, yeah, you'll have that.
I'll leave you with one last thing. I do find it ironic, and like we said, if there's a God, it's a God of irony, that NASA came out and said that during the time they're looking for a Pope, that Mars has a sign that it probably once was a living planet and may have been able to sustain life at one time. A day later, they found a new Pope. Not even a day later, after it was blasted on the news worldwide, but NASA had confirmed that probably could have sustained life at one time. There's a new Pope in place.
Isn't it just magic?
Yeah, you can't make this kind of stuff up, just like the purchase of the largest gay spa or gay bathhouse in all of Europe.
And the porn publishing house. And yeah, you think Pope Frank will be closing that anytime? No.
He's already neck deep in it, and he doesn't even know it yet. Hello, Bob. Have a good night.
I'm going to try. Jeremy, take care.
You too. Bye.
Bye. Speaking of the media response to the Pope, live and livid from Rome, this from the Internet's most brilliant satirist. You really should be subscribed to Your RDA of Irony over at Finnerman Works, FinnermanWorks.com. Hello and welcome to our coverage of the 111th papal election. I'm Bob Costas along with Matt Lauer. Bob, did you know the Romans spelled 111 as C-X-I? No, I didn't, and neither did the Romans. Now, this election is called a conclave because the cardinals are meeting indoors. So if they were meeting outdoors, it would be a convex. Thank you, Matt, for that expression of faith. You believe everything the interns tell you. The potential popes will be judged on beauty, poise, and talent. Did you know that Pope Benedict XVI won because of his Marlene Dietrich imitation? Falling in love again. Why does your staff hate you so much? I doubt that you're intentionally cruel. Maybe they're just underpaid Ivy Leaguers who resent a man of your unique intelligence making millions. Thank you, Bob. Now, the contest will be held in the Sistine Chapel, which was named, let me guess, Matt, was it a nun named Sister Tina? Of course, a Catholic would know that. Well, I sort of had a Catholic education, too. Yes, one of your wives were, and in grade school I had Catholic friends, at least when I gave them my lunch money. Let's talk about the papal election. If the cardinal's choice reflected the demographics of the church, the next pope would be a Brazilian woman. Of course, that won't happen. What we would call gerrymandering was original hieronymandering. So the College of Cardinals is a disproportionate block of Italian curmudgeons. Imagine a room full of Antonin Scalias. Fortunately, they can't abide each other, so they need to agree on the least repellent candidate. Cardinals are not allowed to filibuster, so they're less medieval than the U.S. Senate. There's also a time constraint. If no candidate is selected by the third day, the cardinals start getting smaller meals. By the ninth day, they're looking for communion crumbs. By the time the stomach growls are doing Gregorian chants, someone will get elected. I knew that. No, you didn't, Matt. Our coverage continues with Savannah Guthrie skinny dipping in baptismal fonts. Imagine a room full of Antonin Scalias. And as Eugene notes, they need to agree on the least repellent candidate. Imagine that. The kidnapper was the least loathsome candidate to head the church. The kidnapper. Philip noting, by the way, the church doesn't have a fascism problem, Bob. It embraced it under Franco and Mussolini. No problem. Tell Jeremy I'm not pissed. Just weary of fascist celibates advising folks how to conduct their sex lives. And sadly, I have a cousin who's a television priest and was raised by William F. Buckley. First Uncle Leo as a Sacco and Vanzetti juror, and then Bill Buckley's praise. We have a lot for which we need to atone, and my emails and donations don't even make a dent. Oh, those conservative institutions. Facts never matter anymore. Here are 10 other non-European popes. St. Peter, Bethesda, modern-day Israel. Pope St. Evaristus, Bethlehem, modern-day West Bank. Pope St. Anicetus, Emesa, today known as Homs, Syria, 155 to 166. Pope St. Victor I, Leptis Magna, modern-day Libya. Pope St. Mitiades, somewhere in the North Africa. Pope Theodore I, Jerusalem, modern-day Israel and West Bank. Pope John V, Antioch, then Syria, but today part of Turkey. Pope Sicinius, Syria, 708. Pope Constantine, Syria, 708-715. And Pope Gregory III, Syria, 731-741. There we go. Thank you for the history lesson. This from Marty, who took one for the team, went wandering over into the swamp, did you, Marty? Headline on Newsmuck, you know, that right-wing blather site. Source, Bergoglio, kind man, but more left than most. Talk about one's RDA of irony, says Marty. Really? More left than most? The pro-fascist kidnapper is left? Whoop! Makes you kind of wonder about that, what was his name, Scola guy? The one who was all mobbed up in Milan? See, part of the reason, one of the stories I was reading about Frank said that he exercised his right under Argentine law not to be called to testify. Because, you know, if you're a priest, you can do that. Not to appear when subpoenaed. Charming. Remember when the Catholic Church spirited Bernard Law out of Boston in order to keep him from getting indicted and gave him a little apartment in Rome? Who knows, perhaps over the largest gay sauna in Europe? Yeah. It's probably the same thing that happened with Pope Frank. Hustled him out of Buenos Aires before the heat could get on too good. And now he's Pope, Vicar of Christ. Stand in for the big man. Jeebus. What a brutal time that was, the dirty war in Argentina. And now, a man supposes to speak for Jesus Christ, who actively participated in kidnapping of political undesirables. Wowzer. Just wow. So looky. We've got a little bit of show under our belt and a whole bunch of stuff that we can go into at our leisure. Your calls are welcome, 304-658-3333. We will take a break. Thank you very much, Sal, for meeting a portion of Dr. John's challenge for this evening. Now we only need $40. Thank you. Thank you, Dr. John. Thank you, Sal. This is Conversation Radio. This is The Horn. Everybody dance. That's Sting, of course. They Dance Alone, a song about the women who would, by dancing, protest the disappearance of their beloveds. Lines are open, 304-658-3333. Going to them just in a second here. I want to share something with you in regard to all of what we were talking about. Something from Bishop Carlton Pearson, who many years ago had it was a wonderful conversation we had here. It was right after he'd been thrown out of his church for declaring that he had a revelation that much of what he had been preaching as a Pentecostal, born again, yada yada yada, was baloney. Well, in an email titled Christianity Inc. This being Prayer Meeting Wednesday and everything. He says, Christianity Inc. and religion overall is broken. Not just broke. Not broke. Just broken. It is in serious disrepair systemically. The world is watching things shift, even if in some aspects of denial. The English word history is in effect a combination of the words his story, meaning the story of Jesus, who is called Christ. Though he is recorded to have said, I must go, so far, we've refused to let him go and instead build an entire religion, indeed a cult following, around him. This is not new. It was done by the Buddhists around Siddhartha Gautama and Islam around Muhammad, Zoroastrians around Zoroaster, and the list goes on. It seems ironic, Bishop Pearson says, that the next pope's election will be noted by smoke, as in blowing smoke. I don't mean to be disrespectful, but Jesus confronted his religious traditions in the same way, and now the religion named after how he was perceived, Messiah, Christ, is repeating the dogmatic spirit he confronted over 2,000 years ago. When will we ever learn? I strongly believe in messianic consciousness, he says, or the appearance of messianic persons and personalities throughout human history who seem to have been enlightened and evolved persons. The problem is the devotees and followers of these messianic teachers institutionalized the teachers more than their teachings, causing the doctrines or teachings, forces, and farces after the God-type person disappeared or died, whether Moses, Jesus, or Joseph Smith. We've called Christianity the greatest story ever told, when in fact it may be little less than the greater story ever sold. And billions of us bought it and have bought into it. The question is, what have we been sold and why do we continue to buy or sell it? Indeed. Indeed. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
This is Edward.
Hey, Edward, how are you?
I love that. The greatest story ever sold.
Amen.
Amen and amen. Oh, by the way, I really enjoy listening to you and Jim and your conversations together.
Jim is a gem.
He sure is. Well, a few days ago, before all this occurred in Rome, I talked to a very dear friend of mine in Wichita, Kansas. And he was born a Roman Catholic, raised a Roman Catholic, but makes no bones about the fact that he is a recovering Roman Catholic. And so he told me a few days ago, he said, well, I might throw my name in the hat to become Pope. I said, what are you talking about? He said, well, any male in the Roman Catholic Church can petition to be Pope. I said, Larry, you have not been to confession in a long time. And he said, I know. I said, well, you haven't been to communion either. And he said, well, I'll go to confession. And I said, look, it's been so long since you went to confession. If you did, they'd have to cater the affair. Oh, and by the way, the song Falling in Love Again, there's another one I got for you.
Okay.
How about Lily Marlene?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Well, you all take care and have a good time and keep up the good work.
Well, thank you, Edward. You as well. Have a good evening, and we'll talk soon.
Okay.
All right. Bye now. Our good buddy Edward in Dallas. They have to cater the affair. That's kind of like what we say about politicians here in West Virginia. It's damn crooked, they'll have to screw him into the dirt when he dies. Note from Granny T in Tennessee. Hidden Nazi persons? Bob, just tuned in. Sent you an email yesterday regarding the Supremes. Only six on the bench now. Our Nazis don't hide. They just sit around and edict or whatever from the bench. America the Boobyful. How sweetly we sing. Sorry, dude, just in a bit of a snit. I'm sure by the end of your program I'll be laughing and in a better mood. Good thoughts to you and the Horn family. Thanks, Granny T. We'll get you perked right up. Oh, mercy. It's true. Yeah, we've got with their little barbed wire wrapped around their leg and flagellating themselves. And Eugene Finnerman nailed it. The College of Cardinals on conclave is a room full of Antonin Scalias. Because Benedict and John Paul II made sure that whole gang were right-wing. Some of them are locked up with Opus Dei. Others are, what's the one that's really popular in Italy that's trying to get the church more back into public life and set up a theocracy? Ew! Yuck! Yeah, well, this guy, Frank, is hung up with that bunch. Jeebus. Yeah, just before I go back to the phones, just to share a few quotes with you. And I know Dr. John's just going to love this one. In inveighing against same-sex marriage, the new Pope Frank said that same-sex marriage is, and this is another quote, a scheme to destroy God's plan. Yeah, really. Having those bath towels monogrammed and buying those little shell-shaped soaps together, that's an... man, did you know the gay was that powerful? It can destroy God's plan. Wowzer. But this is the one I thought. Gay marriage is, again, this is a quote from the new Vicar of Christ. Sorry, couldn't help myself. I'll be better. Same-sex marriage is, quote, a real and dire anthropological throwback. Now, let me simply start by saying, what the f*** does that mean? A real and dire anthropological throwback. I think he just called gay married couples Australopithecines. Whoop. Or, I don't know, maybe Homo habilis. Maybe Homo cohabitationis. Anthropological throwback. From the guy whose investment portfolio now includes the biggest gay sauna in all of Europe. That's... Yeah. In Argentina, he said, gay marriage would gravely harm the family. Right? Yeah. Here he is, writing to some nuns. Cardinal Jorge Mario Bergoglio, Cornholio, what? To the Carmelite nuns of the Archdiocese of Buenos Aires. I write this letter to each one of you in the four monasteries of Buenos Aires. The Argentine people must face in the next few weeks a situation whose result may gravely harm the family. It is the bill on matrimony of persons of the same sex. The identity of the family and its survival are in jeopardy here. Father, mother, and children. The life of so many children who will be discriminated beforehand due to the lack of human maturity that God willed them to have with a father and a mother. What is in jeopardy? Does it just astonish you that there are actually still people on this planet that take people like him seriously? Just who were those thousands of in St. Peter's Square, mumbling and, Jesus. A clear rejection of the law of God engraved in our hearts is in jeopardy. Oh, for pity's sakes. This letter goes back to June 22nd, 2010. I turn to you and ask from you your prayer and sacrifice. The two invincible weapons which St. Teresa confessed to have. Cry out to the Lord that he may send his spirit to the senators who are to place their votes, that they may not do it moved by error or by circumstantial matters, but rather according to what the natural law and the law of God tell them. Pray for them, for their families, that the Lord may visit, strengthen, and console them. Pray that they may do good for the nation. And by do good, we mean make sure that the gay can't get married. Creep. Back to the phone. Hey, welcome to the program. Oh, wait. There we are.
Hey, Bob. It's Preston.
Hey, Preston. How are you? Good to talk to you.
Yeah, likewise. Definitely. I thought that was a great call on the music by Sting.
Yeah.
what's the title of that song? Dance Alone?
They Dance Alone.
They Dance Alone, okay. Yeah.
I mean, this guy has real live, honest to goodness, dripping human blood all over his hands. Pope Frank.
Yeah.
You know, didn't approve a kidnapping, participated in it.
Brutal. And what was the documentary you mentioned, or the movie about that period? And
No, there's a book. It's a book, okay. And it is, I got it right here. I will in a second. The El Silencio.
Okay.
By Horacio Verbitsky.
You know, I think there's a film based on a true story starring Jack Lemmon. Do you remember Missing?
Yes, yes.
I'm pretty sure that was Argentina or Chile. I'm not sure. It may have been Chile. I'll have to look into that, but it's
both of those had their U.S. government supported horrors.
Exactly, and we have such a hard time in this society looking honestly at that, talking about it. You know, it's just, I don't know, too painful, or I don't know, but there's a real disconnect that if we ever do, you know, confront, you know, who knows, might have some better relations, maybe stop, you know, feeling threatened by the rest of the world all the time and see that we're the ones threatening it.
Right.
When I had the privilege to travel to South America, I remember I was in Venezuela and this lady from Chile came and she knew English well and she spoke about her experience there and how traumatizing it was. And then at one point recently, she was trying to get into the U.S., and she had her visa denied, so there was that whole, you know, tightening of the borders going on for people through the visa process at times. And, yeah, so, and speaking of our history of Latin America, there's a documentary by John Pilger called The War on Democracy, and it goes through kind of country by country, you know, the overthrows, the interventions, the proxy armies, the training of troops at the School of the Americas in Fort Benning, Georgia.
Right.
And it also features some honest words from Hugo Chavez, rest his soul.
Yes.
And the struggle continues. You know, the media, the establishment media continued its rampage against him, and I appreciated that you brought up that piece on Think Progress. I left a comment on that person's article, that hit piece.
Oh, wasn't that just revolting?
Yeah, yeah. Utterly imbalanced, wrong on a lot of levels.
Yeah, they do a good job reporting, but I would think that a so-called progressive organization would know better than to try to give authoritarian marching orders to other progressives.
Yep. I agree. It was really disappointing. But, you know, I think they got a fair amount of response to it, critical response. They did correct something of it right away, kind of I forget what the exact issue was, but they issued a correction. A lot of the rest of it was just kind of attitude and a spin in plucking certain segments, you know, elements of truth, but they're blowing it up real big and then they ignore other truths, things that, you know, it's so cheap and easy to talk about other people's stuff. Again, what we've got going on, that coup we supported and the economic sabotage we, you know, try to pull off and on and on. And so it's been interesting, though. Even within the establishment media, I've seen moments where people are trying to be, you know, something gets slipped in there. And just the massive turnout spoke a lot. I mean, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people in the street. If people came across some of those photos, talks to this person's popularity with all his issues and, you know, issues with the movement at large, you know, which is the real issue, not just this one figure, but the movement of the people. It's a powerful thing to see. We like to think of ourselves as the beacon of democracy and world leaders and this and that, but we've got a lot to learn from the global south. I was so impressed when I went there and found their community gardens. And, you know, there's always that narrative that Chavez was taking over the media and, you know, controlling every thought, completely mischaracterizing the reality, which was there are still plenty of private media there.
Yeah.
And attacking him daily. They did revoke the charter of, like, their kind of a Fox News that had participated in the coup attempt. And, you know, they didn't try to cut him off there. They let them run out the rest of their 25-year contract and said, you know, you're not serving the public, and so we're taking this airspace back. I'd like to see it happen here with Fox instead of that toxic dump.
Amen. Amen. And the fact of the matter is, they overplayed their hand, because during that coup that you mentioned, Preston, what you had happen was Chavez went to them and said, at least let me tell my side of the story.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, screw you.
Mm-hmm.
So they kind of showed where they were, and where they were was not interested in public service.
Right. That's right. And they have since, what I also saw, they have since created all these community radio stations, and even on, like, mainstream channels, they'll just have cameras going around Caracas or wherever they're at. And if they see a protest, like a strike going on, they'll go up to them and say, hello, is there something you'd like to tell the people about your struggle? Can you imagine something like that taking place in our business media?
Yeah, can you see Bill O'Reilly's producer doing that?
Right. They'd only show a labor-related protest if there was some moment where maybe someone got pushed by what they call a union thug, you know, or some scene they concocted themselves. Also, when I got to Caracas, I turned on the TV, and on one of our major stations was the documentary The Corporation.
Really?
Yeah. And I was like, right on. And then following that, they had this, like, this conference was going on, and one of the students for a democratic society was there. I forget his name. You know him, I'm sure. The guy associated with the that 60s manifesto.
Oh, I hate it when this happens.
But that's okay. It's not key. But anyway, a progressive guy, a committed progressive, was in Venezuela, too, at some conference. And and I ran into a bunch of Cuban nurses, actually. There were a lot of kind of reading circles, literacy circles, food giveaways, because they knew the economic system simply was not feeding people. And they were providing food.
You talking about Tom Hayden?
Yes. Thank you. Excellent. Good call. I met all these healthcare practitioners from Cuba, which has, again, another country you can learn from. What they do in terms of healthcare is absolutely remarkable, despite the several decade embargo and attempted overthrows and all the rest of it, invasion attempt. They train so many nurses and doctors in Cuba, and they send them all over the world as healthcare ambassadors. And
yeah, it is a completely different model.
Yeah, yeah. And they sent a bunch to Venezuela, and they were doing health education, sex ed, all that stuff.
Well, you know Che Guevara's daughter is a pediatrician.
Is it like Adela or something
like
that?
Yeah, I think so.
I actually have a video where she interviews Chavez and talked about developments and projects, and really interesting. And also, I don't think that one's available on YouTube, but there is one called The Revolution Will Not Be Televised that is on YouTube. And it was created by these two Irish filmmakers who were in Venezuela right before the coup, just kind of doing a general movie about the changes when they found themselves right in the middle of the coup. Absolutely fascinating documentary. And I was so happy. I was listening to NPR's Talk of the Nation the day Chavez died, or the day after. And NPR was kind of all over the place. They had different commentators at different times. Some were very reactionary. Others were more sympathetic. But during one of the call-in segments, a person called in and mentioned, there's this film called The Revolution Will Not Be Televised. So it's getting around. It's getting around. And so, yeah, interesting things happening. And the Pope, the new Pope, yeah, we'll see. But, you know, I
meet the new Pope, same as the old Pope. Pope.
Yeah. I continue to find, though, the progressive, the religious left, and, you know, people like Roy Bourgeois of the School of the America's Watch, and all the Jesuits who have been protesting that institution for so long.
Yes.
They're doing their good stuff, and recently...
Yeah, and, you know, I give religion a hard time on this program, but it is, you know, I try to make it clear, Preston, that what I'm doing is in regards to hypocrisy.
And I have, hierarchy, yeah.
I have no issue whatsoever with personal spirituality.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that's where real spirituality is. There is nothing spiritual about the hierarchy of the Roman Catholic Church or the hierarchy of any organized religion. There's nothing spiritual about it. Because it, by definition, cannot be, Preston.
Well, I think you're largely right, but I think there are sometimes organized religious institutions that make some good things happen. Certainly, again, have their problems. You know, I'm thinking of, like, the Unitarians.
Sure.
You know, that's a sort of that's an organized religion, and I would love if more progressives were to check it out.
Because, I've said repeatedly, you know, if there was a viable Unitarian fellowship around here, you know, I have somewhere to go on a Sunday morning.
Yeah.
And probably would. But the nearest one is 60 miles away in Charleston. The one that was in Beckley folded years ago, to the best of my knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Probably lost a lot of their audience to the telepreachers and all that stuff. That, again, really diminishes.
Well, I think generally speaking, most of southern West Virginia is not receptive to the Unitarian idea, because we live in a brutal place with brutal jobs, and we need and most people need a brutal God. Because that's the way it works out.
A dominating God, dominate the earth, have a dominating force over you. Don't.
Right. I mean, look at it. Isn't it fascinating how differently gods develop based upon the simple geographic location of their invention? Look at Yahweh, bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky god. Now, he's mean as a snake, and he comes from a harsh, hateful, dry, barren desert environment.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, the conceptualization of the Tao that we get from Lao Tzu is an entirely different spirituality that comes from a much different climate.
Yeah, and then you have interesting views of the world developing from, you know, people who might live in the Amazon rainforest, for example.
Precisely. The Romans had a very businesslike. Very businesslike relationship with it was contract based with their god, with their gods, you know, Jove and Juno and the rest of them, and that arose from the fact that they were business people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were engineers and merchants, and so they had this transactional relationship with their deities.
Yeah, and speaking of religion, kind of religious ceremonies. I was half expecting today to see, was it the white smoke that comes out?
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah, smoke, because the no pope smoke is black, and that's what one correspondent referred to as being as black as the smoke from a Chinese coal-fired power plant.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I was half expecting to see white smoke coming from Denver Broncos headquarters today, because I guess they signed Wexler.
Yeah, they did. Me, I've always favored the green smoke that they've got, you know, that they had in Oz.
John Elway, the demigod, came out and made a pronouncement.
And then it saw his shadow and ran back in and won't come out for six more weeks.
The believers rejoiced, and I have to say, I
I love this transition, Preston.
Well, you know, I was born in Philly, and then I lived in Omaha for a while, went to high school there, and then I went to college. That's what brought me out to Colorado. I went to Colorado State University in Fort Collins. And, you know, when I was a fan, I was an Eagles fan. And when I came out here, I was more of a Cornhusker fan. And I noticed I'd get a lot of flack for that, you know, Cornhuskers and Colorado people, you know, that whole
thing.
Well,
and, you know, the Rams, Colorado State had a long, long dry spell, football-wise.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, and CU, you know, Nebraska beat up on CU every year.
Yep.
Buffalo's. So, anyway.
Ralphie.
Yeah. And for fun, I was like, "Well, okay, I too can play this game. I'm gonna root against your Broncos." And I've become this like anti fan.
Yeah, the anti Bronco.
Yeah, and I must say, this past season restored my faith in the religion of football. that game with the Ravens and how they went on to win it. I must say, I got a kick out of that. But
well, that, you know, that game sort of, because remember, the Ravens are actually the Browns.
Yeah.
And so I thought that game was sort of a comeuppance for the Browns Broncos game. You remember Jim Kelly in the drive? Or not Jim Kelly, but
Elway did the drive against the Browns.
Yeah. It was
Bernie Kosar, I think.
Yeah. Bernie Kosar was the Cleveland quarterback. Right.
Okay.
So I thought that was just sort of a kind of a mirror image thing going on there. Hey, I gotta ask, how long did you live in Philly?
Well, I was born there, and I went to elementary school there. Went to actually cool Quaker school in Plymouth Meeting, and then we moved to Omaha. My mom, my sister, and I.
Are you familiar with a place in Philly called Bartram's Gardens?
It doesn't ring a bell.
Well, it was the first botanical garden in the United States.
Oh, that's cool. That's good to know.
And here's the fun part. I'm curious. I want to go there sometime, and Agnes especially wants to go there, because the person who founded it was a man named John Bartram, America's first naturalist, and he is Agnes's multi great grandfather.
Oh, wow! How exciting!
Yeah,
cool to check out.
So I guess caring about the natural world is encoded into her genes. So
but it was a great experience. I was there until fourth grade, and then I actually went back during part of middle school as well. So it's fond memories, and I kind of, you know, keep up on it when I can and hope to get back there someday.
Fascinating man, John Bartram. One gets the idea he was a drinking buddy of Ben Franklin's.
I'll have to Wikipedia him. It's how you spelling that last name?
Bartram. Bartram.
Okay. But quickly back to a different sort of religious experience. I had a really interesting experience about 2 weekends ago. I don't know if you're familiar. Are you familiar with the Flobots at all, the hip-hop group?
A little bit, but not enough to speak about it.
You know, they had one kind of big hit song called Handlebars, and there's a video to it, and it's a very intense, radical, political message. And they've had a couple another CD more recently, but the lead singer, hip hop rhymer, Johnny Five, is kind of doing his solo things. And recently he's been collaborating with this kind of neo folk musician named Laura Goldhammer, who's absolutely remarkable in her own right. And they, Johnny's been going to this Presbyterian church nearby, and he went to his church, and he's been working with the pastor, and they did this service for, it was called like the socially conscious people or some, or socially active people. Oh, here it is. A spiritual service for the socially active and socially conscious. And it was called Worth. And it dealt with feasting, fasting, and fossil fuels. And Johnny Five did some rhymes, and Laura Goldhammer did her music, and there was drumming and flute and piano, and then the pastor came out, gave a remarkable talk on our, you know, carbon footprint, pollution, conservation, stewardship of the earth, you know, things that the Bible actually does talk about but gets ignored by, you know, again, they focus on
right by the you know, yeah. Catholics who prefer to simply ignore the more stupid pronouncements of the church on things like contraception and abortion and mm-hmm. the rights of women are referred disparagingly as cafeteria Catholics.
Mm-hmm.
But in point of fact, the right wing are the ones in the cafeteria line, because they can blow right past all that freedom and social justice stuff. And Peter had a sword. We can go kill Iraq now.
Right. Exactly.
The Southern Baptists actually used that as justification for declaring their undying love and support for George Bush's murder of Iraq.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And so it's fun to find the occasional nugget from, I know, Pope Paul, and even the recent one. Sometimes they'll say some interesting anti-capitalist stuff or, you know, something along those lines. I try to wave it around when I can. It's kind of fun to.
Well, yeah, the rise of liberation theology was a very different Roman Catholicism, and that is why it had to be quashed. And John, and you know, everybody, a lot of people think about John Paul II in much different terms, but his primary, he killed communism.
Yeah.
Well, he also killed liberation theology.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, took it out behind the barn and cudgeled it to death with that big old shepherd's staff he's got.
Yeah, you know, I remember him being quoted in, of all things, Adbusters. So he was an odd mix for sure.
Well, and to expect some sort of broadening of social justice concepts in the church under this guy, who is wrapped up, I can't remember the name, it's not Opus Dei, it's more of an Italianate radical right-wing Catholicism. This guy is wrapped up with that. And again, their primary goal is to reject the tenets of the Second Vatican Council that was convened by John the 23rd.
Interesting. You know, just before I called, I was looking up a writer. He does astrology, actually, but he calls it free will astrology, and that's his website. Interesting guy. You know, some of his horoscopes, you know, some I like, some I like less so, and usually interesting. And I was kind of looking over the horoscopes, and at the bottom of this list of horoscopes, he has something called sacred advertisement. And he just writes, instead of talking about his own work, he'll reference other people's work in these sacred advertisement segments.
He writes,
here's Carolyn Mace's explanation of faith. Faith is the power to stand up to the madness and chaos of the physical world while holding the position that nothing external has any authority over what heaven has in mind for you. And then he writes, if you don't like the word heaven and miss a statement, substitute a term that works for you, like your higher self or your destiny or your soul's code. Modify anything else in it that's not right for your needs as well. When you're finished tinkering, I hope you'll have created a definition of faith that motivates you with as much primal power as you feel when you're in love.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I think I'm going to leave you with that. I'd like to, hoping to make a yoga class this evening. And,
oh, cool. Get a little stretching in for me.
I will do that.
Preston, have yourself a very good evening. It's nice. I'm glad you were able to get in time for us to have not such a short conversation this time through.
For sure. And, one last P.S. The National Conference for Media Reform, I don't know if you're aware of that.
I heard about it, yes.
Yeah.
That's one of those things I would love to, love to visit.
Right. Well, we'd love to have you or any listeners of the Horn family. Yeah, the National Conference for Media Reform is in Denver, April 5th through 7th, and people who might be interested or might know people in Denver who might not be aware of this might want to give them a heads up, and there's more information at freepress.net.
Yeah, I'd love to go out there and stream this stuff and, you know, just put the conversation out into the universe.
That would be awesome. If you need some kind of Kickstarter-type support to fund a project like that, I would definitely contribute to that effort.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Preston.
Hold it over. And,
and by the way, we got a note in from Michael here. He says, before you go, not to be too much of a cynic, he says, but when the occasional pope or cardinal makes the occasional mildly anti-capitalist remark, couldn't it simply be that they don't want the competition? But he also said, P.S., plus one for the Flowbots.
Right on. Great. Great.
All right. Preston, you have a good night.
Likewise. Bye-bye.
The Horn's resident optimist, that's our buddy Preston calling from Denver. 304-658-3333 is the number for this prayer meeting Wednesday. If you want to get in on the conversation, you are more than welcome to do so. Hey, welcome to the program.
And how are you?
I've been better. I've been better. Spending 3 hours and 45 minutes crawling around pulling cables and trying to get another computer into position was a bit of a booger for the afternoon, Jim.
Oh, the difficulty with your
whatever. Yeah, that's why we didn't come on until 6:45.
Hmm. Well, I just finished watching Night of the Iguana, so
excellent.
Other thing.
Excellent.
Wonderful film. Yes, exactly. I love Ava Gardner. And I also love Marlene Dietrich. You want me to see Falling in Love?
No, I already warbled a couple of words out.
I heard. Yes.
That was an imitation of Benedict singing Falling in Love, imitating Marlene Dietrich. So,
I'm going to leave that subject alone tonight.
Yeah.
Because if I don't, there will be sparks flying. But going back to the history of the church and the Nazis and things of that nature, let's start with the Argentine. We know who was in power in 1945. It was Juan Perón, or he was shortly to come to power with Evita. And, of course, they were a haven for German Nazi refugees. As a matter of fact, it's part of history or mystery that Evita, or Eva Perón, the champion of the Los Descamisados, the shirtless ones, was also in cahoots with Otto Skorzeny. You know who he was, don't you?
No.
Now, he was one of Hitler's paladins who rescued Mussolini when he was in...
Yeah.
Well, a guy that had a scar face, and he was... pretty hard guy to deal with, but anyway, there are a number of connections between Argentina and different nations in South America that harbored the, Nazi fugitives.
Yeah.
And, of course, the church did have certain people who allowed these people to gain passports and Red Cross documents and things like that get into the Argentine or South America, period. That's well known.
Yes. Well, was there not even some connivance on the part of the OSS in hustling Nazis out of the country?
Well, we're not going to go right there. But what I will say is this. Next to the Argentine, as far as harboring Nazis are concerned, I'm not going to get on this program and call Wild Bill Donovan or CIA or whatever. I'm just not going to do that. There were certain elements of the government that did their very best to get the best of Hitler's scientific elite. I mean, after all,
Ferdinand von Braun and that bunch.
It was a colonel in the SS, you just named him, who was the father of our modern space program.
And whom, if we had listened to him, we would be on Mars by now. Well, I mean, we are with a robot, but
here's the thing. Von Braun was, of course, in the employ of the SS. That's who took over the German rocket program. And, of course, he was himself in prison at one time temporarily because he thought it was more important to be on the moon than it was to provide vicious weapons against the British.
Right.
And, of course, we did employ a number of German intelligence specialists, experts in the East, Reinhard Galen, people like...
Well, remember what George Patton wanted to do?
Well, that's what George Patton wanted to do.
He wanted to...
And you see what happened to him.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, he basically was a soldier who only knew soldiering, and what he wanted to do, in my opinion, was to continue fighting, because that's what he loved to do. That's what he was trained to do, and he just loved being in the war. And I'm just not going from the movie Patton that came out.
No. I mean, that's historically borne out. It's the same kind of sentiment that was manifested by Robert E. Lee when he said, "It's a good thing that war is so terrible, lest we enjoy it too much," or something along those lines.
I don't think that was Patton's idea. He enjoyed it terribly. And he, of course, wanted to go on to Moscow and stuff like that, you know. Of course, he had a lot of problem there and was going to be sent back to America before his untimely.
Can you imagine the Korean conflict had he not been killed?
Well, I can't even speak to that because, I mean, MacArthur wanted to go in with atomic bombs.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are a lot of things that are much more critical to think about than what happened in Rome today. And that's what's going to happen.
I know. I feel a little bit silly even talking because, you know.
I mean, you know, we have this new pontiff. Fine. We'll move on. I hope he does better. I hope he's able to ameliorate whatever conditions that can be ameliorated are. And I'm going to leave it at that.
Well, I think that's a fair statement.
I think so too.
One may certain, you know, one may hope. The ultimate question, however, Jim.
I mean, you know, let's
is
say,
whether is whether or not,
as far as our backgrounds are concerned, all of us have things in our backgrounds that we not prefer to discuss. And I'm just going to drop it on that right there and hope for the best and hope for the better. And like your late caller or earlier caller, excuse me, be an optimist. I don't agree with his views on gay marriage. I don't agree with his views on contraception. But, you know, hell, that's just me. But I think a real problem we're going to have pretty soon is in North Korea.
That is, I don't look at North Korea as mere saber rattling.
I don't either.
And I think of all those mothers, sons, and daughters who are in the United States military who are right smack dab in harm's way there should they decide to cross the 38th parallel.
Well, they declared that null and void.
I know.
So, I mean, you've got this guy up there, and you've got his troops running out in the water to meet him and stuff like that, and like he's some type of demigod or whatever the hell he is, but nonetheless, the grandson of Kim Il-sung and son of Kim Jong-il. I can't remember what his name is, but anyway, it's all just a bunch of syllables to me. But This is some dangerous stuff that's going on here.
It is. And the fact that that nation is starving?
Well, yeah. And they have those missiles, Taipei missiles, and there are other types of categories they have. I just wonder exactly what position China is going to take on this, because I haven't heard a whole lot from Beijing about what's going on in Pyongyang. Have you?
No. I've kind of looked around for some of that, and no.
Well, they've been deadly silent about it.
And the fact that you can't, you just can't imagine that the Chinese are, well, North Korea is a pain in their butt.
No, it's not a pain in their butt. It's an offshoot of their own homeland.
Yeah, geographically, but no, I mean, the regime itself is a hindrance.
Then why have they kept it in power all these years? Because basically, if they didn't want it to stay in power, they would have taken it away. I mean, they took over Tibet. Why not North Korea? You know?
Well, it may be a war that even they don't want.
Well, that's why I'm saying, you know, no, they don't. But, of course, you had certain Chinese leaders, like Chairman Mao said, you know, if we have a nuclear war, well, so what? We'll have so many other million left, too. I mean, they don't have any concept of loss of human life and stuff like that. But I just thought I would mention the situation in Pyongyang and what we would do if, in fact, they were to overcome and overrun, and they could do it with no problem at all.
Oh, yeah. They could overrun South Korea in a minute. The U.S. forces that we have stationed there south of the neutral zone.
And the use of tactical nuclear weapons. My cat just jumped on my claw to crawl out hell on me, excuse me. But the use of tactical nuclear weapons would be, well, that throws the baby out with the bathwater.
Right. I mean, the South is incredibly, hugely industrialized. And one wonders what our response would be.
I don't think we do anything. Tell you the truth. That's one solution I can't find to save me for all the tea in Mexico. As to what we would do should they go ahead and invade and overcome South Korea.
Well, they would obviously have to go through those troops we have stationed there. And that would, do you think a Republican House of Representatives, run by a madman like John Boehner would sit idly by?
I don't know.
This whole country, you know, Jim, this country loves, this country loves the front end of wars.
How can you predict anything of what John Boehner would do? Can you seriously sit there and tell me what you could predict what he would do? I don't think so. I don't think so.
Well, I just...
It may be just that we might have to accept that as a fait accompli if it involves escalating a situation that has been brewing for 60 years with nuclear weapons, because that's the only way they could be stopped. And then you've got other nations going to be involved in that area.
Yeah, there goes the neighborhood.
Got it. But
well, it is a situation that is not made entirely by North Korea, Jim. You know, one of the North Korea looked around at the behavior of the United States and realized that they're only, you know, the only nations that we couldn't shove around were the ones that had nuclear devices. And there you go.
Well, wait a minute. There has been a great deal of nuclear proliferation among different nations that we have, you say, shoved around. but who are our allies.
That's what I'm talking about. If you are inimical to the United States, your best bet is to have a nuclear weapon, because then the United States has to behave differently toward you. I mean, that's the thing that drives nuclear proliferation. Look at Pakistan. They went to work on a nuclear weapon as a deterrent to India. And then they turned around and sent the technology to North Korea. I remember when that news story broke, don't you?
I think so.
Because Pakistan detonating their own nuclear device came as a complete surprise to the CIA, who had no idea. And then in turn, we had no idea that they were basically running a nuclear technology Walmart and shipping everything that was necessary for the process to Pyongyang.
Oh, you're talking about Dr. What's his name?
Yeah, I can't remember his name now.
Mm-hmm. Well, we made a lot of mistakes in that area. We certainly made mistakes when we left Afghanistan in the situation that we did back in the 80s or early 90s or whenever. Read Charlie Wilson's War. That's pretty
right.
Quick on that. And, of course, we... Well, I don't know. There are certain situations that are almost diplomatically, they're without solution to me. I don't know what they're going to do with the situation there.
Well, generally speaking, when they've done this in the past, we send them some food and they calm down for a little bit. Because that's the operative reality of North Korea, is they're starving.
Well, that's worked in the past, but, you know, it doesn't always continue to work. I mean, you know, just because you throw food and money at something like that at a rogue regime, it simply doesn't work. It may work for a while.
And that's the situation. It has worked for a while, but not necessarily.
It will not necessarily work in the future. I mean.
Well, you'll notice that the abrogation of the truce was declared not by the maximum leader there, but by the generals. And so, to a certain extent, that's not just a message to the world. That's a message to the 29-year-old, 30-year-old dear leader. As to who's really running that show.
Well, that's exactly what I'm saying. I mean, it's the military that's running that country. But I guess we'll see. But it has given me cause for grave concern because I've been to South Korea. And I've seen what could happen if they could unleash those hordes on that country. It would not be a pretty sight.
No, it was a brutal and bloody thing the first time through.
And our use of nuclear weapons to stop them, well, we'd be destroying our own people as well as our own troops. Well, that's not a solution. Do you see where I'm going with this?
Yeah, I do.
I mean, this is one situation in which if you want to throw the baby out with the bathwater, that's fine. But you may destroy the whole plumbing works. And there was something else I wanted to mention the other night, and I mentioned to you, I sent you an email, but you ignored it, but it has to do with the Soviet pipeline.
No, I didn't ignore it. I just didn't have time in the middle of the show to educate myself on it.
Well, it's right there, but nonetheless, there are pipelines coming out of the, not the Soviet Union, but out of Russia and related republics that are just as big as the Keystone thing, you know?
Yeah, but are they tar sands pipelines? Because mm-hmm. because the Keystone is not just a pipeline. It is it's an incredibly risky, dangerous pipeline because of what one has to do in order to transport the sludge.
Well, I would dare say the Russians are not exactly known for their safety standards, now are they?
No, and an oil—that's the whole point. An oil spill is bad enough, Jim, And it is, and by bad enough, I mean really god-awful bad. But what is attendant upon the Keystone XL is the fact that these they call them tar sands for a reason. It is tar. It will not move.
It has to be heated to 100.
The whole darn thing has to be heated up. And at the same time, it's still oil. It is still flammable, still combustible. So in essence, the Keystone Tar Sands Pipeline, in addition to being a climate change nightmare, is also a secure. It's a bomb that would run the north-south length of this country. It's one long bomb.
Well, my understanding of one that the Russians are working on is a pipeline which they can pretty much pipe anything they want to through it. There's no guarantee that it will not be that type of bituminous floods flowing through those pipes. I mean, I just want to point that out.
And, you know, that's another function of our global suicidal urge or suicidal relationship with hydrocarbons.
Well, hydrocarbons basically are the foundation of all of our fertilizers, and they, you know, it's much more to hydrocarbons than just combustible fuel. We're talking about the whole pharmacopoeia of chemistry as far as fertilizers, things of that nature. That's one reason it's so powerful.
Well,
oil derived to put in your car or gasoline to put in your tank, it's also the stuff that keeps your crops growing. I mean, the entire hydrocarbon industry has enmeshed itself so well that it controls fertilizers and things of that nature.
Right. Well, you know, consider, and maybe this is apocryphal or urban legend or something, but I remember reading that, among others, the Standard Oil Trust and the Rockefellers were hammer and tongs behind the criminalization of hemp because they, you know, because the things that hemp was used for, you know, rope, you know, sisal hemp, and, you know, use hydrocarbons to make that now. You know, nylon rope, that sort of thing. And
it'd be hard to realize, as far as our modern day fabrics like Dacron, nylon, all these other things to be manufactured from hemp. You couldn't do it.
No, but things like nylon rope replaced old hemp rope.
Well, it was cheaper and it was more.
But did you see the statement the other day from one of the upper level?
I mean, I have never opposed in the history of this program the manufacture of hemp, Bob.
No, but what I'm saying, did you see the remarks by the upper level? I think he was an admiral who basically said that climate change is the great threat to American national, the greatest, among the greatest threats to American national security?
Well, he was the one in charge of the coastlines, and he was talking about oil refineries and things of that nature and how they would be damaged by it. That was his statement. That was his concern.
Indeed.
So, I mean.
Well, he was talking about
he wasn't talking about climate change for the sake of climate change, this, that, and the other.
No, he was talking about the strategic effects of it, the fact that so many of our refineries are in coastal areas that will wind up being underwater.
Exactly. But, hell, that wouldn't stop us. We've got a lot of refineries that are underwater. We just build them right on top of it.
Yeah, just back up a little bit.
Yeah, that's about it. Well, look, I don't have anything much else to say, so I'm going to get off here and let somebody else talk who has more to contribute than I do. So you have a good evening.
Hey, thanks, Jim. You too. Bye now. Our buddy Jim, not too far away from here. Email was just provided to me. It comes from Hernan in Buenos Aires. And I think... I think this bears reading. Because, and again, just to clarify what I was talking about with Jim, I'm not Catholic. And what I said earlier, I care more about who the greenskeeper is at Augusta than I do who is the vicar of Christ at Rome. But this institution and the person who titularly heads it has destroyed the lives of countless millions and broken the beings of little children in their thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of them, millions perhaps. And so Hernan is in Buenos Aires, and he writes with the reality of who this guy is. He says, just so you know, the new pope has been accused many times by investigative reporters of being a collaborator with the dictatorship that destroyed Argentina in the 70s and murdered 30,000 people. The new pope has been accused of helping the military to kidnap and murder people that opposed the military government. The new pope has been accused of collaboration with the torturers that stole babies born in captivity, that is, born from mothers that were kidnapped and then disappeared during the military regime. The new pope has been accused of blessing the so-called death flights, a procedure in which the military threw kidnapped people from airplanes and into the sea. The new pope is against the Equal Marriage Act signed into law in my country in 2010. The new pope said that a homosexual marriage is a war against God and a move by the devil. The new pope is against a woman's right to privacy, stating that a pregnant mother, even in the cases that the abortion would have no punishment configured by law, is not a life, but two lives, and both of them must be preserved. Hernan says, as you see, nothing has changed. The Catholic Church will always be the Catholic Church. Amen. Amen. But we must remember, insofar as this is Prayer Meeting Wednesday, that it's not just the Catholic Church. Oh, by the way, a quick update. Thank you very kindly. We are now at only $30 away from meeting Dr. John's Wednesday challenge. He will match up to $50 if the 50 comes in. So thank you. Now, an email from Philip. Fairness and Queens. Let's be fair about the coverage of the selection of the new pope. Since the banking and financial crisis, we folks in these United States have been fascinated by institutions that are too big to fail but repeatedly do. For that matter, ever since I saw Elton John's Benny and the Jets tour, I have had no interest in England's royal family. After all, if Elton's not the far more interesting and true reigning queen of England, who is? If the church worried more about sexual predators in its ranks and less prurience and obsession with the sexuality and sex practices of homosexuals and heterosexual women, it might have just a wee bit more credibility. By the way, we New England types are grateful for Hugo Chavez for selling cheap petroleum products to Joseph P. Kennedy Jr.'s organization so our elderly and poor could have oil during the winter. And I don't recall Hugo invading any nations, neighboring or otherwise, for fictitious reasons. He did much for the poor in Venezuela and was elected by popular election. No wonder he was a problem for the United States. That's it for the night, says Philip. Yeah. But no, like I said, it is Prayer Meeting Wednesday, so it is worth remembering that it is not just the Roman Catholic Church that has a lot of really bizarre sex hang-ups. There is also the Protestant side of weird. And there is no greater, no bigger poster freak for that than the Family Research Council's Tony Norman Perkins. Yes, Mother Bates. Pat Fagan is a senior fellow at the Family Research Council. And he and Tony Perkins showed up on something called Washington Watch, which I guess is some sort of radio thing. And as I have warned all along, it's not just Roe v. Wade that these freaks are after. They are after absolutely everything that touches upon the private human choices that that control conception. To wit, this. You're going to love it.
The court decided that single people had the right to contraceptives. What's that got to do with marriage? Well, everything. Because what the Supreme Court essentially said is single people have the right to engage in sexual intercourse. Well, societies have always done that. There were laws against it. Now, sure, single people are inclined to push the fences and jump over them, particularly if they're in love with each other and going on to marriage, but they always knew they were doing wrong. In this case, the Supreme Court said, take those fences away, they can do whatever they like. And they didn't address at all what status children had, what status the commons had. By commons, I mean the rest of the United States. Have they got any standing in this case? They just said, no. Singles have the right to contraceptive, which means singles have the right to sex outside of marriage. Brushing aside millennia, thousands and thousands of years of wisdom, tradition, culture, and setting in motion what we have. It's not the contraception, that's it. Everybody thinks this is about contraception. What this court case said was young people have the right to engage in sex outside of marriage. Society never gave young people that right. Functioning societies don't do that. They stop it. They punish it. They corral people. They shame them. They do whatever. The institution for the expression of sexuality is marriage. And all societies always shepherded young people there. What the Supreme Court said was, forget that shepherding. You can't block that. That's not to be done.
You got that? And I know you do. So when I say, do you understand how very, very dangerous these freaks are? To you, to us, it's a rhetorical question. But most of America doesn't understand how dangerous these freaks are. This guy speaks glowingly of shaming, of corralling people for having sex. Corralling. That means pinning people up. That's basically a concentration camp, isn't it? This is their fervid dream for this country. The church, as Bishop Pearson noted, is broken. Religion is broken. And all of them uniformly yearn for that day when they, not popular government, but they determined who did what when. All that palaver about thousands of years of wisdom. Part of our problem is the fact, with all due respect to the technological advancements of the Bronze Age, part of our problem here in the 21st century of the current era, part of our problem lies in the fact that we're still taking advice from Bronze Age people who dealt with their Bronze Age problems the best that they knew how, but whose solutions are many times in no wise related to the realities of what we live here now today. Bronze Age peoples had to worry about someone, some horde riding across the plain and putting the torch to their town. And in the archaeological record, there is plenty of evidence of those things happening. They did not have to worry, however, about a nuclear firestorm. No. They didn't have to worry about the planet's ability to continue to sustain human life. No. They had rules that dealt with who had sex with whom when. In some instances, people were killed for having sex with whom, when. And this guy bows no knee to the Pope at Rome. But his position is every bit as dangerous as the position of a Pope who declares that gay people who simply want to love one another are making war on God. That war on God business has, at the hands of his church, gotten millions of people dead over the centuries. Brushing aside millennia, thousands and thousands of years of wisdom, tradition, and culture, and setting in motion what we have. Well, what is it that we have? We have a culture that professes to cherish freedom. If we allow institutions that are predicated upon the worship of an invisible, unprovable entity to dictate how we live our lives, newsflash, freedom's gone. There is no freedom in a theocracy. None whatsoever. And yet these people are, this organization is deemed to be somehow respectable. Just like the Roman Catholic Church is deemed respectable, even though it has actively covered up, hidden, pandered for its priests who have routinely and regularly raped children. Jesus. So, you know, that's Tony Perkins and this Fagan creep. We go from there. You remember Pastor Robert Jeffress of the First Baptist Church of Dallas? Well, I got another one. Robert Jeffress went on the TV over to Trinity Broadcasting Network and its Praise the Lord show. He was all full of himself because they done opened up their $130 million newly built mega church building. $130 million. And well, he had a little something to say about the homosexuals. Why these people spend so much time, so much fascinated time, worrying about the sexuality of another individual, I don't know. boring lives, I guess.
Jesus said, here's God's standard, any deviation from that, whether it's adultery, whether it's premarital sex, or unbiblical divorce, or homosexuality, all of those things are variations.
Stop it. Or unbiblical divorce? Anybody want to go wandering around the Gospels and find me the biblical divorce? Now, there is Old Testament biblical divorce. I mean, it's a function of the Jewish law. But Jebus said no divorce. And right out of the gate here, Pastor Jeffress has just invented something out of whole cloth, unbiblical divorce.
God's standards. Yep. But the reason God gave us that standard is not because he hates us. It's because he loved us. He said, you know what? Here's how sex operates the very best. I want you to think about this. One time in heaven, God was sitting up there with his sketch pad, and he said, you know, I'm going to design human beings, and would it be fun if they started doing this together and one with one another? I mean, think about it. God dreamed up.
Think about it. This guy sits around thinking this stuff, if you can call that thinking. Of course, when God wanted to have sex, he possessed an angel and went down and, rutted on a little teenage girl in Nazareth? Ew. That's worse than Zeus.
Up sex. He thought it up for our enjoyment. Yeah. He gave us the equipment to enjoy it with. Yes. And he said, here is how...
But you can only enjoy it if you're making a baby while you're enjoying it.
It operates. It ought to be between a man and a woman, and it should be in the security of a marriage relationship. Yeah. And that's what...
Amen. Did you hear the amens in the crowd, brethren and sistren? In a marriage relationship. Possibly with three or four other women and one fella. In a marriage relationship which has been secured by the property transfer of the female to the ownership of the male, along with some sheep, some camels, some goats, and all that Bronze Age stuff I was talking about a few minutes ago.
Why God designed it that way.
Yeah.
It's just like, you know, I had a TV...
Here comes the fun part.
Hey, yeah. It's just like, you know, I had a TV repairman out at my house today, and, you know, he was repairing the TV. It was a television set I'd bought several years ago, and, you know, in the instruction manual, it said, now, plug this into a 120 outlet. Mm-hmm. Suppose I said, oh, I'm not going to follow those instructions. Those are antiquated instructions. I'm going to plug it into a 220 outlet. It's my TV, and I can do whatever I want to with it.
Yeah.
Well, it is my TV to do what I want to with it, but I'm going to blow that TV to smithereens if I put it in a 220 outlet.
Sweet. So, homosexuality is just like plugging a 110 into a 220 outlet. And stuff gets blown to smithereens. These poor fools. Blown? Did you really have to use blown in that sentence, Pastor Jeffress? Are you not self-aware at all? And then, we are coming to the toward the end of tonight's program, but we got to get one more example out. This one comes to us from the, I think the Minnesota legislature. Holy mackerel. Now here's the backstory. Yeah, this was a discussion about marriage equity in the House of Representatives. Of the state of Minnesota. And a guy named Mike Fry sits down before the microphone to testify about the dangers of homosexuality. Listen, I mean, this is just too much. Mike Fry, Minnesota.
Pass out. Oh, it's in the packet. Thank you.
My name is Mike Fry, and I speak as a concerned Minnesotan and father and a husband. And the thing about same-sex marriage is that people...
Wait, he speaks as a concerned father and husband and a concerned Minnesotan, and he left out the fact that he speaks as a moron.
People who are married do have sex, and when same-sex people are married, they do have sex. There's something called sodomy. Sodomy, defined in Minnesota, is sex by or with the mouth or through the anus. When there's ejaculation into a vagina, there's a barrier there, as in your packet it states there, of a cellular tissue that doesn't allow the sperm that has an enzyme at the head of it to penetrate the blood flow. It is designed to go to the egg. That enzyme is designed to burn the outside membrane of the egg cell, go inside the egg, and then deposit the DNA. We call that conception. When ejaculation occurs inside of a colon, it's highly absorbent material. The cells do not have a barrier for the sperm and those enzymes to enter into the blood flow.
Now wait, the colon does not have a barrier to prevent things from going... What? Now wait. I know what the colon does, and I know what's down there. Is he saying that it's reabsorbed? I mean, because the colon has no lining? Excuse me? Well, Jesus told him.
When the enzymes enter into the blood flow and a continued prolonged... environment to that happens, these enzymes in the blood flow, it causes what we know as AIDS, acquired immune deficiency syndrome. And AIDS, of course, brings on common diseases, colds, and things, and it magnifies them to a point where it's unhealthy. Not only does it strengthen the disease within the carrier of AIDS, but it also, with a person that has a destroyed immune system, but it also strengthens the disease that can be spread to the society at large. There's an example in Los Angeles County in California.
You get it from a toilet seat.
Where among the gay community, a disease that can...
Enough. Just enough. Yeah, that's where AIDS came from. Oh, help me. I think we'll call it quits now. So we'll back tomorrow. Hopefully have some more of these problems sorted out. I don't know if there's going to be a rerun stream or not. That I've still got to work on. But thanks, everybody, for helping out. And, yes, thank you. Thank you, Paul, for meeting Dr. John's challenge. We did it. Thank you. Y'all have a good night. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie, Sparky, Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to John Fox in Australia. Thanks to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and AIC Act. .org. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. And now it's time for Rick Smith on the Horn.